Back to order. It's Tuesday, March 10th, almost 7 o'clock, and we're going to be discussing Senate File 340. This is a Senator Scheid's Homestead Lender Mediation Act. And there's appears to be about 8 or 10 people to testify, so we'll try to move along if we can. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, and I think we can do that. I just want to say I really appreciate that everybody was willing, all the people behind me and around to, from the public who are here, because, you know, we might have gotten it. I think we could have gotten it started today. We just didn't know, and so I had to make a decision that we would start at 7, and that's what we're doing, and I appreciate members being here for this. It's very important legislation, and, you know, this committee has dealt with predatory lending a couple years in a row, and then we did home foreclosure prevention counseling legislation last year. We had a consensus bill from industry, housing advocates, the legal community, bipartisan legislative representation, and we had a bill that everybody supported. And I think that system, it was up and running August 1st. That's when the law took effect. And I think that it's doing a really fine job. It's doing a good job. I know that there still remain some folks to get to the table, if you will. And so I don't know if I need to refresh members' memory about that legislation, but it was significant, and I wanted to continue to incorporate that counseling in part of this bill. And so I wasn't in on the original drafting, and it was done by several people at the Attorney General's office. And I think it's pretty safe to say that people feel a little embittered about taxpayer money bailing out big investment houses and big banks, and yet not seeing much for the average guy, the homeowner, for example, who just can't find somebody to talk to, perhaps, about renegotiating the terms of their mortgage. And so, and I don't want to pretend that that's happening with all of our lenders. We have very good citizens in our banking community. In Minnesota, we should be very proud of that, and I'm not out to get at them in particular. There may be loans of theirs that may qualify or would probably for mediation, but I know that in most cases they're working with borrowers who are facing trouble. We know that at least one, if not more, of our banks have frozen the reset on any adjustable rate mortgages, did that over a year ago. In one case that I know of, I mean, in one bank situation that I know of, and those things are commendable. And I know we have a very large bank and mortgage lender who holds all their own mortgages. I'm sure they do everything they can to work it out with their customers. And then finally, and last but certainly not least, are the community bankers all over the state. And I know that they know their customers personally in most cases, and if not all cases, and do everything they can to keep people going and moving forward. And I think we knew that we didn't have much predatory lending going on at that level at all. So this is about getting people to the table that we haven't been able to get before. And I think it was 1986, the farmer lender mediation, was it 86? The legislature passed it, and I was in the other body, but I don't remember it exactly, but I didn't have a lot of farms in foreclosure. I had some farms in the district, but not nothing large. I guess maybe at that time I really didn't, but that has persisted. That has been reauthorized every few years, and I think it's actually up for reauthorization as we speak in this legislative session. But that has to do with farmers and required the option of mediation for those facing foreclosure. This bill, well, I also want to give you a bit of a personal perspective that I have on and we're passing around. I think I see one copy. I don't know if any other anybody else has seen it, but it's a copy of the community I live in, the city of Brooklyn Park, and it's had over 1,000 foreclosures last year. And I also represent the city of Brooklyn Center, and that's up over 300. And it's about roughly a third of the population of Brooklyn Park. So that's significant, and a very bad number, a very bad statistic, and I live in the middle of that. I want to share something else about, because I think some people have said, I've heard it quite a bit actually, at town meetings and on the news, on talk radio, why should we help out people who made bad deals, bad loans, got themselves in over their heads, didn't manage their finances, didn't take care of business? And I understand that, but I can tell you foreclosure's coming to a house next door to you. And so you have to be concerned. If not for your neighbor in that house, then at least certainly you'd be concerned about the value of your own property. I have a very good friend whose home would probably have sold 4 years ago for $180,000 to $200,000. And the house right next door, larger than their house, more updates, same a Rambler just like theirs, but larger, was just foreclosed upon, and the lender has it online for $62,000. That has a dramatic impact on the value of their home, the home that's not in foreclosure, and on all the other houses on the block. And it's not the only house that's been foreclosed in the block. And as you can see, that's what's happened in some of our communities. And I think Senator Phoebe this afternoon commented that a couple of the counties she represents have a very large percentage of people in foreclosure, perhaps not in the numbers you're going to see in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, and St. Paul, but in terms of how much population there is in those counties and the numbers, so they probably have a percentage rate approaching what we're seeing in our communities. Anyway, she said it's significantly high, and it's happening all over the state. I want us to do more than we've done, and when the Attorney General announced application of the farmer lender mediation program into homeowner, onto the homeownership center, or the home, not center, homeownership.
This is quite a while ago.
Just homeownership in general. I jumped at the opportunity to participate in developing this bill, and I'm offering a delete everything amendment so we can deal with that if you would, and then.
That's the A4 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay. I think at this time, rights. Senator Scheid moved the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape she'd like to put it in. Any discussion on that? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Scheid, this is pretty much parallels the 1986 Farmers Act, or is it kind of closer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, the first...
The mediation part?
The mediation part, the imposing the mediation part does, but we didn't have the counseling. This ties to the counseling that we enacted last year that went into effect in August of 2008. Try to get people... We want people to come sooner rather than later. You may remember that discussion. So this happens sooner. This happens, I think, after the default. I mean, we don't want to wait till people... Well, we hear stories of people not even being able to talk. The servicers telling people, we won't even talk to you till you've missed three payments.
And that's
part of people who know they're maybe going to miss a payment. Maybe they haven't missed one yet. Can't even talk to someone till they've missed three payments. Now, that doesn't happen in every case, but it shouldn't happen to anybody. And so I think with the high number of foreclosures that we've seen, that system has probably bogged down even more, and people are getting more. I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear from the folks from the Homeownership Center or Habitat for Humanity, who I think are going to testify and talk about the kind of experience they're having in terms of timing. But we want people to have this notice, and the notice will say to them, and it's on page 3, I think that's important to see what it says. It says you've defaulted, and as you know, you've defaulted when you've missed your first payment. I think that's technically correct. So it says you've defaulted, and it says that your lender intends to foreclose, or who holds the person who holds the mortgage, the entity that holds it, intends to foreclose on your property. You have the right to participate in a mediation process. And then it says to learn more about mediation. And then it says on line 315 through 317, you must first participate in foreclosure prevention counseling with the agency listed below. And this is the form that goes right now. That's current law, the pre-foreclosure notice, as you look up above there. So, and then all of this existing language is what we did last year in that legislation. Then the rest of it is technical and describes just who is what and how the request will be handled. I'm going to let Mr. Frichte describe perhaps the detail of that, but that notice goes that you want to participate in mediation then, then the Attorney General finds out that you want to be in mediation, then they have so many days to get back to you and set up the first mediation meeting. And all of this, as I said before, I got a little bit ahead of myself, is after the person has been to counseling. And I've heard expressed some concern that people might not want to go to counseling. I think what we can do with the counseling, what I hope to accomplish is there are some situations, if we catch people soon enough where they can make themselves whole, they can reinstate, if they're only behind a month or two, they may find a way to be current. It may not be one of those adjusting rate mortgages and
but if they say they don't want
to. And they may not have lost a job. On the other hand, if they have lost a job and there's no prospect and they've been out of work for a long time and they've done everything they can and they can't make it, you know, I think the counselors kind of I'm not sure what they do. I don't really want them to say, no, you can't go to mediation, but I want them to tell them what it would be involved in mediation and how you come to the table prepared. I mean, you have to have, I'd certainly want people to come with what their budget is and what their expenses are and, you know, all the other debt they have to pay on a monthly basis, et cetera, and then, you know, the income and the fact that somebody may need to get a second job, a part-time job or whatever, but to get people ready to come to the mediation table with something to offer, being able to offer something. Anyway, there are details in here about that. There's, I think we'll just go right to that, and I'm trying to see where to my Act 2, my Article 2. It doesn't seem to be in here.
I think the Article 2, I don't think the Article 2 was changed.
It wasn't changed. It's just that, I'm sorry, it's just delete Article 1. Forgive me. So Article 2, then, of the bill, it's called conforming provisions, which is an interesting way to say what it costs. It's the financing that would be necessary to pay for this program. And, members, I'd like to not focus on that here. I kind of set that aside to have to deal with that. Although I think this committee might want to weigh in, because if you look at Article 2, I'm looking at the... I was thinking I had to delete everything. I'm sorry. It would... The recording fees... the deed... registration fees would be increased to pay for this. And this is for people recording a deed. Is there anything else? No, it's just registering your certificate of title, registering the deed. That fee would be increased. And I've never been real fond of doing it that way. This was not This was drafted by the Attorney General's office. I don't mean to put them on the spot about that. I think it's not easy to find sources of money, as we know, this year. And I have some ideas floating out and about there. I guess I'd like the committee's opinion. We know we have to pay for this. But that's what Article 2 is. It's all about finding the funding to put into the Homestead Lender Mediation Act account. And with that, I'm going to ask Mr. Kermit Fichte from the Attorney General's office. Am I saying your name properly?
Yes, you are, okay. Senator.
To go through detail of, I guess, mostly Article 1, because I think that's really what the committee needs.
Article 1 is the A4 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So, yeah, she's touched on quite a bit of it already, but go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm here to say that the Attorney General supports Senator Scheid's bill. And to echo her comments, it's designed not only to help homeowners going through foreclosures, but their friends and neighbors who are seeing the adverse effects in their neighborhoods and in everybody's neighborhood. Property values are falling, and until we get a handle on the foreclosure crisis, I don't think we're going to be able to get out of the economic crisis. The mediation in this program, like the foreclosure prevention counseling, is just another tool to help homeowners and help try to stabilize home values. Mediation is something that's used in trying to resolve all sorts of disputes, and it's been very effective, and I think that's one of the reasons why we feel it could be very effective in this situation. And again, until we get a handle on slowing these foreclosures down, property values are going to continue to fall. I can answer some of the more specific questions you may have on the bill. Any of the, I guess, the experiences that our office has with mediation, we do see cases where, unfortunately, the homeowner is not able to reach anybody from the entity that holds their mortgage. And this bill is designed to get that entity to the table to see if there's something that can be done to fix that mortgage. In a lot of situations, there isn't going to be anything. I think Senator Scheid said there will be situations where people have lost a job, and I think the counselors might say that, you know, they've taken a look at it, and there's just no money there. There's no way that person can make payments on the mortgage. But there are other situations where the person can keep paying that mortgage, can stay in the house, and can keep another house from going vacant. So that's what this bill is designed to do.
Any questions of Assistant Senator Gerlach?
Thank you. Could you let me know a little bit about the situation or the complaints or the issues that you're getting at the Attorney General's office? Are they from a particular or a small number of financial institutions? Are they broad-based? Are people not able to get resolution or be able to reach and talk to someone, like you've said? Is that across the board, or is it some specific? You don't have to name names of financial institutions, but is it narrow or is it broad? Can you tell me a little bit about what you're hearing at the Attorney General's office?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Gerlach, we do see complaints across a broad spectrum of lenders. And when I say lenders, some of those are not what you would consider a typical lender. Some of them may be an investor, but a lot of times it's hard to tell because all we see is a mortgage servicing company, one of the more, you could pick a more popular, a fairly popular name. And a lot of times the homeowner hasn't been able to get any resolution, hasn't been able to get through to someone, hasn't gotten their phone call returned. We do see some cases also from entities that would be more well-known that, you know, sometimes our office is able to get through to someone at a specific entity and other times they haven't been able to. So it does run the broad spectrum. But there are, I guess there's no way to generalize that there is one specific type that we do have a problem with. But it's the institutions and the lenders that are doing more of the foreclosures that we see more often. If an entity isn't having any foreclosures, we're probably not seeing many complaints out of them either.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman.
Gerlach.
If I could ask a question about Article 2, because Senator Scheid mentioned that the funding mechanism was something that came from the Attorney General's office. I'm not real fond of the mechanism chosen. Can you tell me a little about some of the other options that were considered, and why did you select this particular option as the best funding mechanism?
Well,
sir,
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I can tell you that we've been meeting with a lot of other folks to see what other ideas they would have, and we're willing to listen to any of those. I think this is something that was decided on in the process. I wasn't involved in directly in that, but I have been involved in some of the meetings with other stakeholders, such as the bankers, who have an interest in this bill, and we're willing to listen to anything that people have to say as far as alternative funding mechanisms go.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, and I may have shared this with Senator Gerlach, I'm not sure. But this is just off the top of my head. One of my first responses was, well, why don't we, since everybody, every property owner, every citizen has an interest in their neighborhood and their communities and in the state's economic health and well-being, and that if everybody who pays a property tax in Minnesota was charged 50 cents, maybe twice a year, as we pay property taxes twice a year. And 87 counties sent 87 checks to the state of Minnesota representing every property taxpayer. That's pretty simple and easy to understand. I don't know how much money that raises. I don't begin to know. Maybe it would have to be $5, but I'll bet not to fund this. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm just saying I've thought that since this directly relates to property and property value and community strength, school district strength, et cetera, that it related well to the property tax. And so that was just...
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess...
Oversimplified.
Sure. And I don't think I'm alone. I think there's other members on the committee that probably share that, share with me that, you know, when we use recording fees or, you know, deed taxes or not necessarily deed, but the registration fees and those sorts of things, that's designed to cover the cost of the transaction fees. And using them to implement public policy can be problematic because we kind of tack things on. And, there's the deed tax has been a target or a source from some folks who needed some money for affordable housing. Good cause, great reason, all, but really, is that an appropriate funding source? So that's why I wanted to ask a little question about maybe what were some of the other funding mechanisms or some of the other options and such. But this looks like the one that was decided, and I'm not so sure I'm comfortable with that.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Rashad.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Gerlach, and I don't want to offend the Attorney General's office. I think I probably admitted some discomfort with that procedure. I have not really ever supported raising that fee. Or that tax, as a former realtor and person who knows that it's about charging people who are purchasing a home to pay for a program for people who are losing theirs. And it's never seemed like the best way to go about finding a source of funding for doing other things, as you say, rather than paying for the actual transaction of what what it's meant to accomplish. But I am looking for that, and this bill would land in finance for sure.
Yeah,
so
I'm just going to comment that we've got a couple more stops here. And
I'm not sure that there isn't some stimulus piece that couldn't be used to fund this as well, Mr. Chairman. I'm not 100% sure of that. I think maybe you could.
I think that's good, Senator Gerlach, to work in progress on that fee stuff, because how much can you tack onto these things all the time? It's pretty heavy lifting if you're selling or buying a home. I mean, those things add up in a hurry, big time. So Senator Scheid has said she will continue to look at that, the financing mechanism.
Okay. Chairman, I think there are some other people here to speak on behalf of the bill, and I know there are some folks who
it's nighttime, and we've got about 10 people to testify.
So,
you want to get right into that testimony, is that correct?
Let's see. I don't know if anybody from Home Ownership Center or Habitat for
Humanity
wants to speak. I don't know.
Do you want to go in that order? Kristen and Cheryl.
Oh, please do. Can you get one?
Peterson we can name or pronounce, but the other, Beckerman? Okay, welcome to the Minnesota Senate. Okay. And particularly to this committee, and all the people that testify, just always state your name for the Senate records. Welcome.
Thanks, Chair Metzen. My name is Kristen Beckman. I'm the Government Relations Director for Habitat for Humanity. Habitat for Humanity, while you know probably about our building homes and our volunteerism, we are also foreclosure prevention counselors and are a part of the Homeowner Center's network of counselors and have a grant to specifically do counseling for the city of Minneapolis. And so I've distributed a letter from our president, Sue Haig, about Habitat's position on the mediation bill, but also wanted to just quickly go over that. And then Cheryl Peterson, my colleague from Habitat, will give you sort of an example of what our counselors actually go through. We are really grateful to Senator Scheid, the Attorney General's Office, the administration, Minnesota Housing, for bringing this bill forward. It is telling. You can tell the families who come into Habitat to go to foreclosure counseling sessions because they wear it on them. They are fatigued and they are sort of carved out. Going through foreclosure is a difficult process. And so we are very grateful for people stepping forward to trying to help the families who are going through these struggles during this economic time. And we are really appreciative of the amendment. The first draft of the bill didn't include the words foreclosure counselor at all. We obviously feel we have a significant role in the process. And so this amendment, putting foreclosure counselors very centrally in the process of working with lenders and the homeowners, I think is a significant improvement. And I would just ask for your support for it. Very briefly, counseling works. Families who are going through the foreclosure process to engage with the counselor on financial management issues, managing their debt, getting to a place with a resolution with a lender that is affordable for them long term is really significant. However, only a fraction of the people who are going through foreclosure are participating in the counseling process. So while we say that we have sort of a 58%, 60% success rate, there are so many more people who aren't going through counseling. So we're hoping that this will help bring more people into counseling. We also don't believe that everyone who's in foreclosure or in counseling needs to go to mediation. We have lenders who we work with very well, and we are able to get to long-term affordable resolutions for homeowners and lenders without having to go to mediation. So we do think it's beneficial to start with a counseling process. We think that, on rough estimate, we could eliminate three-fourths of the people in counseling to having to go to mediation, and that the folks that we can't get to a place of resolution with, the mediation would then be the next best stop. And so we do think mediation will be beneficial, and we do think a counselor engaged with a homeowner who's going through mediation, a family who's going through a foreclosure process is already sort of besieged by probably other creditors as well, and mediation might feel intimidating. So we are interested in the foreclosure counselor staying engaged with the family as they go through the mediation process. I sort of think of it as a teeter-totter, and that the mediator is sort of the fulcrum in the middle, and that the homeowner and the counselor on one side and the lender on the other side, and the mediator is just going to help us get to center. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Cheryl, who can kind of give you a better example of sort of what we're doing in counseling and what our families are experiencing as they go forward with their lenders.
Good evening.
Evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Cheryl Peterson, and I'm program manager of our Mortgage Foreclosure Prevention Program at Twin Cities Habitat for Humanity. And so the first thing I wanted to talk a little bit more about is just the fact that there are a lot of homeowners who are going through foreclosure that aren't in counseling, and kind of emphasize what Kristen just discussed. So our agency is actually the agency who gets the pre-foreclosure notices for the city of Minneapolis. So we get on average between 300 to 500 pre-foreclosure notices a month. Our program only serves owner-occupied properties, so we're currently getting pre-foreclosure notices for investment properties as well. So on average, we're doing outreach to probably about 40 to 60% of the number of pre-foreclosure notices we're receiving. And of those homeowners that we're doing outreach to, we probably get less than 10% who actually follow through and contact our program once we've done outreach to them. And one of the issues with that is the pre-foreclosure notices that we're receiving, a lot of them don't actually have phone numbers. and contacting a homeowner by phone versus contacting them by mail is far more successful. So the second thing I wanted to talk about is a little bit more about how many homeowners we see on average. So our program, in 2008, we saw 600 homeowners in the city of Minneapolis. Of those 600 homeowners, 58% of the homeowners that we saw, we were able to prevent their foreclosure. The total number of foreclosures just in the city of Minneapolis, there were 3,077 sheriff sales that occurred. The delinquency rate for 30 days plus is far greater than that 3,000 figure. So that just goes to show there's still not a lot of homeowners who are contacting our program and seeking our services. The last point I'd like to make is, like Kristen stated earlier, we really do have a good success rate with a lot of lenders. Our supporting this mediation isn't to say that lenders aren't working with our program. However, there are a lot of lenders who take significantly more time than we'd like to work with our program. So I went back and looked at our 2008 numbers of the homeowners we were able to actually do workouts for. On average, it took 4.5 months to actually have a successful workout. And I wanted to specifically give one situation. So we currently have a case that's been open for 19 months. So the homeowner has gone into foreclosure several times. She's had several sheriff sales scheduled. The lender's been willing to postpone the sheriff sale, cancel it, but never actually do a final workout to resolve her delinquency. At this point, she has thousands and thousands of dollars in foreclosing attorney fees. On top of that, she is significantly farther behind on her mortgage than she was when she contacted our program and owes over $40,000. In a situation like that, I'd like to be able to consider mediation and go beyond what our agency is able to do. So with that, I'm willing to answer any questions that anybody might have about counseling and our services that we offer. So basically what we do is we do a financial assessment of that person's situation. We give them advice on the foreclosure process. We go over a budget with them and look at what's going to be affordable. And from there, we then try to negotiate with the lender and make sure that whatever workout option that homeowner accepts is going to be a long-term affordable solution for them. And in cases where it's not affordable, we discuss the foreclosure process and other alternatives to foreclosure, such as a deed in lieu or a short sale.
Okay, thank you. How difficult is it? A lot of these mortgages are sold on the packaged or on the secondary market, and when you folks try to call the lenders, who do you talk to? Who do you get a hold of? Is it easy or tougher? I mean, if it's a local lending institution, you can get on the phone or go talk to them, but is that a tough process? Or maybe I just think it's tougher than it really is to find out who's got this package or who's got this mortgage and please talk to me. You know, instead of, do you know this? Do you know that? Never at all. Can you get through to people?
Well, Mr. Chairman, basically what we have to do, our first point of contact is customer service at the servicing company. And then from there, once they have our release, we then have to go on to loss mitigation. And so there's large servicing companies that have offices throughout the United States. So we can sometimes contact a lender 10 times before we actually get through to the correct department that we actually need to fax paperwork to. And actually, I actually went through the notes in the case that we'd been working with for over a year, and we'd actually contacted just by phone the lender over 40 times. And so one of the issues is every time you contact the servicer, you get a different answer. And so we don't necessarily have direct contact with the investors on that loan. One of the things that we do hear quite a bit from mortgage servicing companies is that whatever we believe is going to be affordable, that the investor won't allow that. So not all investors actually allow loan modifications. And so one of the things that we sometimes will ask is that there's a principal reduction. So it is very difficult to actually get in touch with the right person to answer your question.
Probably helps to make the case, Senator Scheid, why we need this bill.
Mr. Chairman,
the average person,
Well, Mr. Chairman,
not sophisticated in this area. Who do you talk to? Where do you go?
Right, Mr. Chairman, I think that it makes it really underscores, I think, the need for some kind of something hanging over, you know, that entity to say, you know, and I would hope that we would see these cases that she's talking about going to mediation and going perhaps earlier, as soon as you run into the stumbling block, you know, knowing that you have to come to the mediation table, you have to send someone, will get, I think, some of the mortgage holders to be more responsive.
Timing is very critical, I would think.
Mr. Chairman and members, I just feel so strongly that this actually, at the end of the day, is going to save money for lenders. Foreclosure is very expensive. It's an expensive legal proceeding to go through. The homeowner who's being foreclosed upon doesn't have money to share in those costs. They may be charged costs, but you aren't going to see that money. The homes are losing value. They're sitting vacant. They're being damaged. They're not moving in great numbers. That doesn't mean everyone won't sell, but many aren't. Sheila Bear, who heads up the FDIC and was actually on 60 Minutes on Sunday, in case some of you may have seen her, I read where she said that when FDIC went out to IndyMac, which is a California bank, I guess it's a California bank. She was in California with them. She believes that the FDIC saved the lenders or the holders of those mortgages for on the average of $49,000 a property. So I think at the end of the day, banks and or lenders, the holders of the mortgage, will actually not lose as much money as they are losing when they foreclose. And maybe that's a factor, or that's factored, multiplied by the fact that there are so many. If it were just a handful of mortgages that were being foreclosed, as we are used to in our Minnesota tradition, then, you know, I wouldn't go there. But I believe that this is actually going to save banks and lenders money at the end of the day.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scheid, and I just have to say, first of all, I'm a big believer in alternative dispute resolution and mediation for whenever we can try to find a way to work things out without having to have winners and losers. Sometimes, usually with a mediation, you won't come to an agreement unless people can find a solution that they feel is better than the alternatives, and it allows for some creativity and conversation to happen. So I think it's a great thing. But the one question I have is I'm wondering if the courts have taken a position on this, only because I noticed that one of the provisions, if someone acts in bad faith, if either party does, is then the court is supposed to I can't remember what the term was used here. Basically, the court's overseeing, I think, the mediation, something like that was the term used. And I just know, because we've been talking a lot to the courts, that they're right now talking about, within the budget constraints, having a lot of cases they're just not going to be able to do, lower-level cases, simply because they don't have the time. So I'm just wondering if they've weighed in on this, if this is going to place any additional requirements on their time.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I have not heard personally, and I don't know if the Attorney General's office, I'd ask Mr. Frickde to comment.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the courts haven't weighed in that I'm aware of, but the provision of the bill does contain a cost and fee shifting provision for the party that is acting in bad faith and to pay the other party's costs, and part of that cost would undoubtedly be a court filing fee. And it's the timelines in the bill are fairly tight. The supervised period is, I believe, in Senator Scheid's bill, 90 days.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, though, without undergoing mediation, you can't take advantage of Minnesota's foreclosure laws. And that's, I guess that's the real teeth of the bill.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, is it contemplated then that you know, even though there might be some situations, just this bad faith situation where it might take some more of the court's time, but there would be other situations where there would be less of the court's time involved? I'm not sure. Or I'm just really sensitive to that issue since, like I said, we're hearing some real dire predictions from the courts about things they're not going to be able to do with their present caseload, and I don't think that paying court costs will probably offset, you know, the fact that they don't have enough people to deal with. I suppose there's no other alternative in a bad faith situation other than having the court directly involved, because if there were, that would certainly be something worth thinking about.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to respond, if I may, to Senator Wolf.
Sure.
She's right. I share the concern about the courts overall, as we know from the Judiciary Committee. And
that's the main.
Are you sit on the budget
section
as well? No. But we know it's a dreadful situation. It's a dire situation. But, I will keep that in mind. I don't know if there's an alternative, but it may have to do with what we find for a source of funding for all of this. So.
Okay, I think you guys are excused.
Very much.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, about 9 witnesses, so if we can move along. Senator Scheid, would it make sense that the next three folks come up together, or are they got the same?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure who's coming.
There's a Phil Doe, Stan Gurick, Al Niguez. Or maybe Phil Doe, are you here? Somebody said that person might not have been able to make it because of the weather. Thank you guys for coming, okay? State your name and tell us your situation. And
Mr. Chair,
and if you think this bill will help.
Mr. Chair, member of committee, my name is Stan Gurick. I live in Columbia Heights. I'm currently 10 months behind on my mortgage. I'm trying to do everything to save my home. And really what I've come down to is when I call my lender, it's a 1-800 number. And I get paperwork sent to the home. And then this is where I get the snowball effect, because I don't hear from them in 2 months. So there's 2 more payments added on. I call back, and they send me more papers. Fill them out again, and it's another 2 months. And it's always a 1-800. You don't have anybody to talk to. I have a counselor through VA. He tells me to call the lender. I call the lender, they tell me to call VA. And it's 1-800. Last time I talked to them was last week, and the lender told me to file online now. So, and then you don't know if it's accepted online. So I haven't gotten into foreclosure yet, but I'm very close, and I'm trying to save my home. So.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I think what he wants to... But the meaning is here that it would really be helpful if you had mediation.
Somebody
so you'd have somebody
yes,
that would have the authority and the power, if you will, to get someone to the table that he can talk to.
Mr. Chairman, committee.
How about an average citizen? No. Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Thank you. That's good points. Sir?
Sir.
Mr. Chairman and committee, my name is Al Enigas, and I live in Napa Valley. And I have... Been playing phone tag with my servicer in California. When I finally get a hold of somebody, I usually get a bean counter that won't let me negotiate there or go any further. Then I'm getting tossed over to the internet, and they have the world's worst internet to try to do any kind of business on. So I am trying to get some sort of mediation going to save my home. And this bill that's before us today would certainly help me today. I'm really frustrated, and I would like to get some action going. That's all I have to say for now. But I'm really frustrated that I can't get through to the people in California to really get a decent answer. One answer that I got was, I asked them to get me to the mitigation department, and they said they didn't have the number. Well, that's just giving me the runaround, and I'm a little frustrated with that. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
You're already, aren't you?
Mr. Yeah. Chair.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Senator Scheid, and I'm sorry that I was out for the first half hour, but how would what you're proposing get them in touch with someone in California?
Well, maybe, perhaps, Mr. Chairman, I can have Mr. Fricke tell you precisely how that will work.
Let's see.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin.
There was a Fritzy Fresh Candy, Is it that
close? But a little
bit. Yeah. Huh?
Okay.
What would happen is if a lender wants to foreclose on a piece of property, they will be required to go through mediation. Or they won't be required to go through mediation. They'll be required to offer mediation. If the homeowner doesn't take it under Senator Scheid's bill, if the homeowner doesn't undergo counseling, and then if that's unsuccessful, undergo mediation, then nothing will prevent this from happening. However, if that lender wants to foreclose on the property, they will have to designate someone to act on their behalf to sit down and communicate with the borrower and the mediator.
Mr. Chair, that doesn't help Mr. Gurry. I mean, he's already 10 months. They're not foreclosing the first month out. So at what point does he get pushed together with somebody besides the foreclosure moment?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, he gets pushed together. If that lender wants to take an action to seize the property or accelerate their mortgage, they will have to go through the foreclosure process and talk to and deal with the mediator. If they want to just let him go on forever and never ask for a payment, they could do that. They could certainly do that. But right now, there's nothing to force them to communicate with him. Instead, this is dragging out. He's incurring late fees. I'm sure there's going to be legal fees, arrearages, all sorts of charges tacked on in addition to what he owes. So, in theory, nothing. If they never choose to foreclose on his house, nothing.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dole.
Mr. Chair, and I maybe you alluded to this, but maybe it'll help Mr. Scogin as well, but I think the most helpful thing in talking about your bill and the timelines is this particular legal sheet that shows, how soon the intent to foreclose, the attorney fees, and the sheriff's sale comes up. What you have here is the counseling period, the mediation period, and then we get to actually some of these things that come up way too soon for people like Mr. Gurick. So I thought this was one of the most helpful pieces that I've seen. Thanks. Yeah,
thank you, Ms. Harrison. Angie put that together. Very much, gentlemen.
I would have thought a little faster. Huh? There's a lot to do with the timing, too, doesn't it? They have to get the bold-faced notice out.
Mr. Chairman, yes, exactly.
Sooner.
And obviously, the sooner that we can.
That's what
people.
I think, like Senator Scogin, well, these people are a little late, but they wouldn't have been late had that notice gone out, like the bold-faced type language, and get it there sooner. Is that correct? They would have had a chance.
Mr. Chairman, that's
now
right.
Now they don't have much of a chance. I'd hate to say that, but if you're 10, 12 months back, it's a tough deal. Okay, we have some.
Mr. Wynn, perhaps, and Mr. Mann, I'm not sure. Next.
Are they here for the federal? Okay. On this bill, right? The federal stimulus, is that? Or
no,
federal?
This is concerning the bill or the process. If that's
oh, okay. Right. Yeah, that's fine. Welcome, Mr. Mr. Wynn.
Chairman, Senators, thanks for the opportunity to be here tonight. And I'm a resident of St. Paul, and I run a consulting business. In St. Paul, we provide advice to nonprofit financial intermediaries, including Habitat, as well as, I don't know if you all saw the paper this morning, but Housing Partnership Network was referenced in an article with regard to Common Bond, and we were actually the interim CFO for Housing Partnership Network for the last year. So we do lots of work with folks that are experts in housing. Housing Partnership Network runs one of the largest pre- and post-counseling programs in the country on behalf of its members. We also provide advice to...
You need to say your name.
Oh, sorry. So he gets it. I said Doug Nguyen earlier. We also provide advice to community banks and credit unions. We have clients in 31 states and the district. We provide advice to 13 of the top credit unions in the country. And what I would say is that it's really hard for your heart not to go out to all the folks that are in foreclosure. And I think this bill has very good intentions. And what I would worry about is that it's going to have unintended consequences. And what I and to emphasize that, I want to just take you down mortgage-backed securitization 101 for just a couple of minutes. So prior to securitization and standardization of mortgages, the way that it worked is that banks made the loans. They looked at the loan. They underwrote the loan. They approved the loan. They bought the loan. They kept the loan. And this was true in the 70s. And so that, for example, if you were a mortgage banker in California and you wanted to make a loan in the state and you were short of capital, literally what happened is people got on airplanes with suitcases full of mortgages and they went to the thrifts in the east that had excess capital. And people like Dime Savings Bank manually underwrote every loan. And the result of all that is that the process is extremely inefficient, and costly. That leads to higher costs for the borrowers. And so we started to standardize the mortgage-backed securities marketplace really in the late 70s and particularly in the 80s. And so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac went from doing, you know, $300 billion in the history of their organizations to a couple of trillion dollars of originations in 2002, 2003. It's a very efficient process. And but what that process relies on is standardization. And to the extent that you have something that's different in your note or in your practices that's different than national practices, you've run afoul of what investors need and require in order to be able to bid for pools of mortgages, and that is standardization. So the two keys to the securitization are standardization and credit enhancement. We have credit enhancement with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and one of the questions that I would ask with regard to this bill is, if you do this, are future loans that you make in the state of Minnesota eligible for delivery to Fannie and Freddie? Because you have provisions in this bill that are different than provisions that are in other states. If they're not eligible for sale to Fannie and Freddie, then let's say that you have to deliver them in a private mortgage-backed securitization. That market's fairly dead now, but there's been billions of dollars of that, actually trillions of dollars of that done as well. And what will the investors think about a provision that makes these notes different than all the notes they're used to in the rest of the country? Will they allow notes from Minnesota to be in the pool? If they're in the pool, let's just say that they agree to, that they're in the pool, what kind of price change will they require in order to be willing to include the loans in the pool? Because what happens in securitization is that uncertainty either leads to you can't do it at all, or it leads to they'll make a draconian view of what the consequences are of the mediation, the timing of it, their ability to get make whole on the property, et cetera. And in my opinion, the interest rate will go up to the folks who are in the state, will be adversely selected by investors relative to folks in other states. And personally, I believe that if you were going to do something about this, I would advocate it nationally so that it's standard and everybody can think about it in the same way versus just doing it in our state. I think that the unintended consequences of the bill is that either we'll be unable to deliver the mortgages into Fannie and Freddie, or that the interest rates required by investors will just go up.
I think that Mr. Attorney General, how do you respond to that, those remarks?
Thank you, Mr.
Don't you wanna?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I would start out by saying that the 50 states have 50 different foreclosure processes that they go through. So each state is a little bit different. That Minnesota is different from New York, and it's different from Iowa, and it's different from Wisconsin and North and South Dakota. Also, there's nothing in this bill that says a lender cannot foreclose on a piece of property. It just says they have to talk, if requested, to the borrower with a mediator. That's it. They don't have to alter a single term of that note.
And Mr. Chairman,
I
would just say I know that I think you're just telling me the city of Philadelphia, and I did read about that, where they're requiring, I think, before a foreclosure can proceed, they're requiring mediation just within the city. I mean, people are taking what I think Mr. Wynn would be calling a desperate measure, because I think these are desperate times. And I don't know if Senator Scogin saw the map of the city I live in, but that just gives you an idea of why I'm here.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is perfect, because this is the difference between you and I, Senator Scheid. I just spoke to the independent bankers last weekend back home. They had 3 consultations last year. Their foreclosures are actually down. They go to church and ball games and grocery shop with the same people they make loans to, and it's difficult for me to understand this, because we do it different out there.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Chairman, I understand that entirely, and so I think they would not be terribly affected. I think they're going to work things out with their borrowers. I understand that. They're holding the mortgages, probably.
Unless credit changes because of this, then they would be affected.
Oh, now it's time for my story. Okay. And some of my friends, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, just going to share something with you. And some of you have heard it in the room, so you could leave if you want to. But when I voted in my first presidential election, I voted for Barry Goldwater. And
I thought it was Teddy Roosevelt.
No.
That's kidding.
I'm only a year older than you.
We're about
the
same
age.
So. That means I voted for Roosevelt.
That's right, too. But I couldn't have voted for Roosevelt. It would have been, anybody. We had dogs named Dewey and Stassel.
Goldwater?
I did. I voted for Barry Goldwater. And you know what? An interesting thing. I voted for him on election day at the consulate in Asmara, Ethiopia, and my vote didn't count, and I'm considering going across the street and complaining about that. anyway, my friends told me if I did that, I was one of 3 out of like 1,000 Peace Corps volunteers in our group that was voting for Goldwater. And they told me if I did, war in Vietnam would escalate, and I'd be really sorry, and thousands of people would die. And they were right. I voted for him, and that's exactly what happened. Then, last year, I heard conversation in, actually, it was in the Judiciary Committee about Senator Alan Anderson's foreclosure moratorium that was for up to a year, and we were warned that credit markets would dry up. But I voted for her bill anyway. They were right. Credit markets dried up. And for people in the room who don't know, that bill was vetoed. Didn't matter. Things are in bad shape, and credit markets have already been affected. I don't know how many mortgages are being bundled successfully today. I don't know, Mr. Wynn. You probably do know. I mean, maybe it's still going on, but I know it's at a greatly diminished rate. Would a number, would you say?
The that clearly the only mortgage securitization that's going on now is Fannie Freddie.
But these guys were on her team. Banked clearly that.
So, anyway.
I was going to, let me tell you what I, you know, these gentlemen were listed right on the top. I assume they were on your team.
No, they are not on your team.
Mr.
Chairman, no.
Mr. O'Han, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good evening. I'm Joe O'Han, Vice President, Community and Client Relations for Wells Fargo Home Mortgage Servicing. From the beginning of the mortgage crisis, Wells Fargo has been committed to doing what is right for our customers and our country by making homeownership achievable and sustainable for millions of Americans. Last year, we made it possible for 500,000 families to purchase a home, and we refinanced another 500,000 families into lower mortgage payments. At the end of 2008, the 8 million mortgage customers Wells Fargo services, 93 of every 100 were current on their mortgage payments. And for the 7 who were not, we have worked hard to keeping them in their homes. Since our servicing portfolio is predominantly held by other investors, this has required gaining consensus to honor our contracts. We connect with 94% of the customers who are 2 or more payments past due and work with all customers, including those not yet in default, to determine if they qualify for a modification. They simply need to prove that they experience a hardship that significantly changed their income and or expenses. When we do, sorry,
a lot of pages there, Mr. Oil.
My notes got out of whack.
I'd like to get home to our maybe that's good. You lost it.
I lost page 3.
That's good. How about 4 and 5? 6 and 7. Go right to your conclusion on page, 12. Conclusion.
Not yet.
You calmed down.
I get, you have to say, I was told to settle down.
I don't know what happened to it.
I'm agonizing with you.
Well, anyway, let me jump ahead.
Oh,
thank you very much.
I won't start over.
You think we were going to let you?
When we do modify a loan, about 7 of every 10 customers remain current or less than 90 days past due 1 year later. Over the past year and a half, through our Leading the Way Home program, we have delivered more than 706,000 foreclosure prevention solutions, or 22% of the nation's reported 3.2 million solutions. As the housing and economic crisis has compounded, services have needed to keep pace with emerging trends and go deeper with modification tools to provide sustainable solutions. In the fourth quarter of 2008 alone, we provided 165,000 solutions, or 3 times what we provided in the same quarter of 2007, including term extensions, interest rate reduction, and or principal forbearance. To help Minnesotans with low and moderate income to purchase and stay in their homes, we founded the Minnesota Home Ownership Center, a nonprofit organization. Since its founding, Wells Fargo has contributed $1.1 million to the Home Ownership Center. We also participated with this group in consumer workshops in Anoka, Brooklyn Park, Buffalo, Duluth, Eagan, Minneapolis, Rochester, St. Cloud, and St. Paul. When we're unable to find a solution for a customer, we work to lessen the community impact by accelerating the sale of the foreclosed home. We maintain the property and pay the utilities and tax bills. We discount foreclosed properties for sale to government or tax-exempt organizations and provide financial support when our team members volunteer to rehabilitate foreclosed homes for low to moderate income families. In Minneapolis and St. Paul, Wells Fargo was instrumental in piloting the First Look program, a national effort to coordinate the transfer of real estate-owned property to nonprofit and government agencies. Throughout the foreclosure crisis, Wells Fargo has advocated striking a balance between providing aggressive solutions for at-risk customers while guarding against the potentially devastating effects of moral hazard. We believe the Homeowner Affordable and Stability Plan is a step in that direction. It contains comprehensive, thoughtful components that address the current challenges our nation faces while establishing the controls needed to ensure only those homeowners truly in need gain access to more aggressive modification solutions. The standardized modification process, known as Home Affordable Modification Program, that is aligned across all investors, such as described in the administration plan, will significantly improve our ability to serve more customers, including those for whom we can predict imminent default. In the modifications we do today, loan terms are adjusted to achieve at least a 38% affordability target. By bringing homeowners who need more help to a 31% target, as defined in the administration's plan, we further increase the odds that they can better manage their overall debt, lessening the likelihood of redefault. Some of the key features of the Home Affordable Modification Program include, from an eligibility perspective, loans originated on or before January 1, 2009, fully documented income, consumers must sign an affidavit of financial hardship, current loans are eligible for the new program, and it's owner-occupied only, 1-4 unit properties. Loans can only be modified once under the new program. As far as from a modification term and procedures perspective, a net present value must be used. If positive, servicers must modify absent of fraud or contractual prohibition. Waterfall to reduce monthly payments to the 31% of monthly gross income includes the capitalization of arrears, reducing the rate to 2%, extending terms out to 40 years, and principal forbearance. The monthly payments include principal, interest, taxes, insurance, flood insurance, homeowners association, and condo fees. All modifications under the program require a 3-month trial period. Also, mandatory counseling with a HUD-approved counselor if back-end debt-to-income is greater than 55%. The program also includes incentives to servicers, lenders, and consumers. Servicers will receive a $1,000 payment for each eligible mod and additional payments of $1,000 for up to 3 years as long as the borrower stays in the program. Borrowers are eligible for pay-for-performance successes. Borrowers can receive up to $1,000 of pay-for-performance success payments each year for up to 5 years. Payments to lenders and investors of $1,000 for current loans will be made and $500 to servicers. Junior lien holders will be offered incentives to extinguish liens on loans modified under the program. At Wells Fargo, we are working to put the systems in place to apply the standardized modification process for every loan we service except where investors' contract strictly prohibited. We advocated legislation that would enable this practice to be extended to FHA and VA loans, and we remain hopeful that all investors align with this new process. Importantly, the administration's plan also does not overlook providing solutions for those responsible borrowers who continue to make their payments, some of whom find themselves in an upside-down mortgage. We applaud the balance created in providing them with solutions and look forward to engaging with more consumers to refinance their Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans when the final guidelines are complete. Finally, with respect to the foreclosure mediation programs, we continue to believe they are an effective means in assisting consumers to avoid foreclosure. From our experience and support of several mediation programs nationally, the following are critical to a successful program. Blanket foreclosure moratorium should not be part of intervention programs, and servicers should not be forced to halt the foreclosure process within any mediation process. Counseling and mediation efforts can be undertaken in parallel with the foreclosure process. Servicers should have the option to use a variety of outreach methods, mail, telephone, email, etc., to satisfy state requirements that they make in an effort to contact borrowers. All mediation sessions should be conducted via a conference call. As servicers are unable to support in-person sessions due to logistics, the number of municipalities conducting sessions. With the increased standardization provided by the Home Affordable Modification Program and the stay on foreclosure sales until loans are deemed ineligible for the program, we do not believe that the mediation will provide any additional benefit to the consumers that are part of this group. Requiring mediation on this group of consumers may create delays in helping consumers secure the assistance they need and potentially add confusion. Instead, the program should focus on those consumers that do not currently qualify for this program. In conclusion, we look forward to continue to work with you on ways to turn the housing and mortgage industries around in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
We might have a fix on some of the federal stuff we talked about. That's what I referred to earlier when I said the stimulus or federal program. That's what I meant to what you explained. But let's try this, Senator Scheid, without objection. Senator, we'll just hear from him. Senator Sparks, what is your...
Mr. Chair, thank you. And actually, I think this might help things along as it's getting a little bit later tonight. I do have an A6 amendment that I think would help take away a little bit of the concerns that the gentleman just testified had talked about, in addition to a few other things. And I believe Senator Scheid has worked very hard on this piece of legislation. As it's going around, I'll explain a little bit, and Mr. Stank can help me if I need any follow-up. But we do understand that the Federal Economic and Housing Recovery Act is going to take place, and it can help as many as 200,000 Minnesotans. So I believe that the A6 amendment, Subdivision A, would go a long ways to help those folks that are worried about that. And again, I don't believe that any of us around this table disagree with Senator Scheid's idea that we want to make sure that we get people that are not willing to negotiate to come to the table. But in the beginning, I think, and Senator Scogin mentioned it too, that we want to make sure that we protect our local banks and credit unions who are already working with our customers. I know especially in the smaller districts, as Senator Scogin says, when they look at those delinquent reports, they contact those individuals very soon in the process, and we want to make sure that we work with those people. So I think that Subdivision B would go towards that, and to try to make sure that we figure out a way that we don't harm banks or credit unions. And if you need more explanation, maybe Mr. Stang can help me. But
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have it in front of me, but I think Mr. Frichte does have the federal of the information on that on the last line, line 10. I think that the federal write-down was to go to 31%.
That's correct.
So I think that right now the standard has been 38%. So this would, the new program is this the HAMP?
It is.
Yeah, the Homeowner Affordability Modification Program, something like that.
But for us to... Yes. Be it compliance or we
I think
just 38 to 31.
I think so. I think that that's
the program. It is 31%.
Right. Yeah. The program is down to 31. So 38 is what's currently required. But I'd like to see you put that to 31.
Before we do that, Mr. Chair, could we have some input from the community bankers or some? I know Wells Fargo. I think that they'll get wrapped up in the. Federal Act, but I think the community bankers were the ones that were negotiating that 38%.
Okay, yeah, we could do that, Mr.
What, Mr.
Gilbert?
Sure.
And you're Mr. Wilcox from Grand Rapids, Minnesota? We're talking about, gentlemen, at this point, the amendment. See if that helps a little bit or...
And, Mr. Chairman, I think this gentleman has come from Grand Rapids, Minnesota.
Good luck getting home. 10 inches of snow up there or 12 today?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Plenty of snow.
Okay. Welcome.
Mr. Chair and members, with respect to Perin B on the A6 amendment, the 38% is there because the lenders in paragraph A receive the incentives from the federal government relating to the Home Affordability Modification Program. The lenders in paragraph B, my understanding is, would not. And therefore, the 38% was chosen because lenders in paragraph A, they need to write down the mortgages down to 38% using their own money. Then from 38% down to 31%, their dollars are matched one for one with federal funds. Mm. The lenders in paragraph B are not going to receive any federal funds, and that's why the 38% was chosen as opposed to the 31%.
Oh, so it's meant to be. Okay, I can understand. Good. Any further? So we leave that at, according to the wishes of the... Mr. Wilcox, did you have a... What's the name?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, Mr. Chairman. I did come to speak just briefly about the bill, if I may.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Technically on the amendment, but you
can
talk.
I can certainly wait if that's to your liking.
Why don't we handle this amendment and see what the committee and...
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I think we'll do it that way. And any Senator Scheid on the...
Mr. Chairman, I understand, but I think that this might tie the hands. If these are in mediation, are you saying that these aren't going to mediation? Is that they won't go to mediation if they offer write-downs to no more than 38%? I mean, that's the standard today, so it's not I'm not sure. I mean, I'd like to see it match the federal program guideline. I'm understanding the issue here for the community banks. I know that's a concern, but I'd like to keep working on that percentage. I don't know if the committee is going to adopt the amendment, but and I leave that to the members to decide that, obviously.
Let's. We've got a couple of corrections and a couple of words that we're going to add to this A6 amendment.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if I might say, I mean, I think that, you know, parens A, the first part after applicability, I mean, I think that's reasonable and something we ought to think about. And so, and I had talked about a similar kind of such a thing. I called them loans being Obamanized, but that probably isn't... That probably isn't too technical a term, but those definitions here, I guess, cover it.
Senate Counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I have suggestions for a couple of technical fixes to this amendment. On line 5 after refinanced, I'd suggest adding or modified, because I think some of the loans in this programs are not technically refinanced. They could be modified. And then on line 10, I would suggest deleting debt to and inserting gross monthly. I don't think 38% of the borrower's debt to income makes any sense. I think the concept is 38% of gross monthly income, and that concept itself is referred to as debt to income in the business, I believe. So unless somebody thinks differently, I'd suggest that as well.
It's just bad. Okay, is that all right? Senator Sparks moves to amend his amendment with those two changes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Sparks, do you wish to, it's your amendment, do you wish to keep the 38% in there? I think you do.
Does that help? Time, Mr. Chair, I think for a fairness issue, we can continue to work with Senator Scheid. She has my understanding on that. I think if there are some incentives to the federal government, we're trying to get to the same place, so I would prefer to keep 38 in there right now.
Okay, with the understanding, she's got a couple more stops.
Chairman, we are really good at this committee. Just keep on working. and we will.
The janitor said we have to be out of here.
No, I don't mean that.
Oh.
No. But we'll continue talking about it and working on that.
Okay. All right, anybody wish to be heard on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Okay, further discussion on the bill. Now, Mr. Wilcox or Mr. Skillbred, or you're both sitting there. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members, if I can just make a few quick comments regarding the bill before Mr. Wilcox. We appreciate the amendment that was offered. We appreciate the work that Senator Scheid has done. We've met with her several times. We continue to have some concerns about this bill, and I do not support it at this time, and we will explain why. First of all, we believe that community bankers are not the target of this bill, but if it becomes law, we certainly will comply. The question is, will the targets of the bill do the same, and will it help consumers? The goals of the bill are things like to get people in the room, better communication. We believe that the community bankers are in the room. They are always available to communicate. They always go the extra mile to avoid foreclosure and to help their customers, because That's just the business model that they have. Our greatest concern about this bill is the assumption, and the assumption is that the farmer lender model is the right template for doing this sort of thing. We contend that comparing farm loans of the 80s to home loans today is an apples and oranges comparison. We understand the good intention in this bill, but we just don't believe that mediation fits. It duplicates the counseling law that we passed last year, which just became effective. And finally, we believe that the new plan by the Obama administration is pretty much the benchmark. But here are some differences that we'd like you to keep in mind between the farm loans of the 80s and the home loans of today. First of all, the farm loans are generally shorter in nature than long-term mortgages. There are generally about four types of farm loans available: operating loans, machinery loans, livestock loans, ag real estate loans. Operating loans are 12-month loans, perhaps renewable or longer. Machinery loans are typically 5 to 7 year terms, as are livestock loans. Ag real estate loans might get into the 10 to 20 year term. So that only that one is really close to a home mortgage loan. Secondly, farms are not only places where people live, but they are working businesses. And as such, those businesses have expense and revenue streams which are complex and more so than homeowners. Those complex revenue and expenditure budgets provide opportunity for negotiation between farmers and lenders. They become opportunities for mediation. So, for example, expenses dedicated to new property or machinery can be lowered by the sale of that property, renting back the property. Land, livestock, and harvested crops can be sold to provide cash to pay down debt. Other decisions like this can free up funding to repay debt while keeping the business in operation. On the homeowner's side, few options exist. Most of the time, there's no business. No business means no business assets, narrower revenue and expense streams. And our belief is that this limits options and restricts mediation and makes mediation less viable. Another huge difference is portfolio versus secondary market issues. Farm loans are held by lenders. The great majority of them, the lenders that I represent, most mortgages are on the secondary market, and the previous testimony related to that. An exception to that secondary market are some community banks, such as one Mr. Wilcox is from, that originate, hold, and service their own mortgages. He and other community bankers like him will do everything they can to avoid foreclosure, and they will do it without mandatory mediation. Last year, ICBM supported Senator Scheid's bill, which included the counseling initiative. We believe that was a right step and the good step in the right direction. It's our understanding from the testimony before and the conversations that that's pretty successful. So we believe that we should stick with it, and that this is questionable whether it will offer real help to real people that need real need. Thank you for your time, and I'd stand for questions.
Okay, thank you very much, Sir Wilcox, Mr. Wilcox.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. I appreciate your time to be here tonight to discuss Senate File 340. I did drive a long ways through the snow to be here tonight, and that is because I do have a tremendous amount of concern as it relates to the bill and my business. My name is Noah Wilcox. I'm a fourth-generation banker. I'm a bank owner. I'm the president and CEO of Grand Rapids State Bank. We're a $250 million asset-sized institution in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. Also a director with the Independent Community Bankers of Minnesota, and the director with the Independent Community Bankers of America. And I have tremendous concern regarding this particular bill and the impact that I believe it will have on community bankers and the communities that they operate in, for the following reasons. In part, it does duplicate some of the efforts of the credit counseling bill, which we did support in the association. I think it's been an effective bill. We are seeing it work across the state. We're seeing it work in our community. And I think it's a little too soon to tell quite how well it's working. And to duplicate further on that, I have concern about. I think there's some questions in the industry, certainly with the banks that I represent in the state of Minnesota as a director, on how the counselors and the mediators interact and work with each other and how that translates to benefit for the consumer. And if a bill of this nature passes without some exemption for community bankers such as myself, who are portfolio lenders and have been traditionally, I mean, for 95 years we've been a portfolio lender. More than 95% of my $100 million real estate portfolio is held in our portfolio. Very, very few of our mortgages are sold to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac or any other secondary market resource, but when they are, we retain the servicing. 100% of the loans that we have sold onto the secondary market, we've retained the servicing for. And we've done that for one particular reason, and that is to maintain the ability to deliver service to the customer. They've come to us for help. They deserve a place to get an answer, and that is with the local community bank. With that, without that exemption, excuse me, I believe the velocity of foreclosures in the state of Minnesota will absolutely skyrocket. The bankers that I represent and that I have talked to that are independent community bankers are talking about sending mediation notices on the 10th day of delinquency so that it does not lengthen the time span of the foreclosure process if they choose to foreclose on a mortgage. That will restrict the flow of credit in the state of Minnesota for homeowners, which has a negative effect for consumers. I believe the bill is well-intentioned. I don't think it targets community bankers, but right now we've carved out in a number of different ways everybody but the community bankers. Community bankers in the state of Minnesota have played by the rules. We've been common sense lenders. We understand our customers, and we've entered into good contracts with good people in good faith. And to have that jeopardized and this kind of a contingent liability in my portfolio will force me as an owner that has equity on the table when I come in the door every day to make very real and difficult decisions with how to deploy the capital going forward. So I don't think that I'm the exception in that case. We have a history of working with our customers. I have a customer today who is self-employed. His wife works in the investments area. His industry is struggling. Hers, with the market, you might imagine. They have children, a home that's worth in excess of $200,000, you know, all the rest of the things. They've got the boat and the snowmobile and those things. They're several months past due. I've been working with them going on 2 years. Any other mortgage lender would have foreclosed on them at this point. They don't need mediation. They need a community banker that will work with them, and we've done that. So to put us in a box where potentially, in order to exercise our rights to collect the loan, we're forced to lengthen that process and engage in mediation when the reality is we've already mediated it to death probably for over 12 months is, I think, something that is not worthwhile and does not serve the community banking industry and will force us to look at things differently. So I at this point, I do not support the bill with the weather. I think you can guess how strongly I feel about it. I would ask if the committee does pass a bill that there is a carve-out or some kind of exemption for community bankers like myself that hold the bulk of or all of their loans in their portfolio. I appreciate your time and the ability to speak. I would be happy to try and answer any questions that anyone might have. Thank you.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Wilcox, I was just curious, when you reserve that right to service, do you sacrifice some profits or do you just absorb more risk?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Scogin. Indeed, we sacrifice the servicing release premium. And as a result, yes, the spread on the loan is thinner than it would be if we had sold the servicing in its entirety.
Let's go again.
Then I'm curious if you've done the math on how long it would take you to foreclose on somebody, given what we passed last year and this bill. How long would it take you to get to the end?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator. I think each situation is a little bit different. Certainly, I would believe that average to be in excess of 12 months, possibly in excess of 15 or 16 months, depending.
And one, so let's go again. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will the Thunderhawks be playing down here this week?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, I would like to say yes, but I don't think it looks so good.
Okay.
Thank
Thunderhawks.
You.
Is that the
where's that gonna be?
You know the Allsteads from up there?
The name is familiar,
the,
but no.
The tennis coach. Yeah, right. He's a tennis coach. Jim Allstead. You should know that, too.
Okay. My kids aren't that old yet.
All right. What do we?
Could I have a follow-up to my timeline question, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, you got a half a minute.
Maybe this is to you, Senator Scheid. You know, I'm just looking through here, and I see 90 days two or three times and a 60, and and then you get to the foreclosure part, which can take. So I'm thinking, are we into like possibly 2 years or better before you could someone could be out of a property?
That's going to add. That's a good question. Is this going to add time to that process?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Fricke would like to say something to that. I am very cognizant of that, and I don't want to stretch this out longer than it needs to. But that's a work in progress as well. And I'm listening.
Do we know about where we're at now, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, that's a.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scogin, the foreclosure process by advertisement, which is most of the foreclosures we're talking about, on the short end is 8 months. Almost no mortgages are foreclosed in 8 months. It's more 9-10 if it's a straight process. And I think what Mr. Wilcox said, it's up to 12, sometimes 15, 16. That's because what's happening right now is lenders are not taking the house right away because they can't sell it. There's no equity there. So that's the stretching out of the process. But the process in Minnesota is designed to take anywhere from 8 to 10 months. This bill does have a 90-day freeze. The design of the hope of the program, though, is mediate the mortgages, the situation as soon as you can. There are going to be cases that come to mediation where there's simply no result. There's nothing you're going to be able to do to keep the homeowner in the home, or the homeowner may not want to stay in the home. So, yes, there is the bill can lengthen the process.
By what, 90 days?
It could lengthen it by 90 days if it was stretched out to its extreme, yes.
I shouldn't editorialize because I'm cheering, but I don't like the extension of you've already got a whole year. You can't do a thing with the house.
Mr. Chairman, if I might comment on our that redemption period. You know, you have 6 months after the sheriff's sale. It's called the redemption period. I don't know how many, you've probably seen some, but I don't know how many people you've seen redeem. And I don't think it's happening very much at all right now. It's kind of a kooky process.
So that's why you don't want to lengthen it.
You know, and, well, I mean, we have this redemption, we sell the house, but the people can stay there and have 6 months to try to get a loan to pay off the whole existing mortgage. I mean,
but then what they do the second 6 months is they go in, change the keys on the door, and rent it for the next 6 months. That's happening too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I, you know,
and the lenders have no way to get into those homes. Usually.
Well, I think I'm open to talking down the road about what you do when mediation fails. And what you want to do about that foreclosure process. And I don't have language for that. And I'm hoping to take this bill to the Judiciary Committee on Thursday night and talk about some of the legal aspects and that sort of thing. But I want you to understand the principle. And I am still listening to people. We just had to get the bill going and have it heard and have people's concerns heard.
Why don't we get up, Mr. Witt? Did you want to say something? And Ms. Mara, you're free to go.
Thank you.
Oh, Mr. Senator Dahl, did you have a question of the previous witnesses? Or?
No question. Just comment while the next people are coming up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I think when you think of the extending out the time period, you're making an assumption, worst-case scenario, that the counseling's not working or the mediation's not working, and it probably would have stretched out to the maximum anyway. At least we're putting in place the counseling and the mediation, and you would hope that someplace along the line that we've kept someone in their home. The last testifier did say that foreclosures would skyrocket. I say we're there. One out of eight is either late on a payment or in foreclosure. I think we've hit rock bottom, and I believe that this is a remedy we need to consider.
And Mr. Chairman.
It's going to get worse.
Ms. Scheid.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, if I might, first of all, I should need to ask for a throat lozenge. I think people know where they are. They're in my purse. And secondly, I'm willing to keep working with that timeline, and I welcome ideas about how to make that work more smoothly, and I'm taking notes. Thank you very much.
All right. I don't know. You know, if 1 year is so good, then make it, Senator Dahl, you don't want to make it 3 years or four. I mean, you can't get in to save that neighborhood, and it screws up the whole neighborhood. What happens, you know, that the water's turned on, that the toilets are taken out, the cabinets are taken out, and you can't get in to protect what you have there, see? And that's, and the copper's gone, and then it goes through a winter. Everything freezes over, so I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, and one thing about this is we may keep some more people in their homes. And lenders and investors are going to realize some money continuing to come on these properties rather than nothing. I think, I don't know, when I was in real estate years ago, they called these houses alligators. You couldn't feed them enough. You just kept pouring good money after bad and trying to keep them from deteriorating and from vandalism and lawns mowed and driveways shoveled, et cetera. It's pretty bad deal out there. I understand that. But right now, I think I can keep people there and keep investors and lenders yet realizing more money at the end of the day.
Okay, welcome, folks.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mara Humphrey. I'm the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Credit Union Network. We represent the state's 159 credit unions. And just wanted to give you a bit of perspective from credit unions. Credit unions' model is basically to support their members. Our whole goal is to make sure that we have a lifelong relationship with our members. We didn't get involved with the predatory lending. We made loans that we thought were good. Unfortunately, we're getting hit by this economic downturn just like everyone else. It's basically the collateral damage that's coming with falling home values. And frankly, a lot of the foreclosures we're seeing are the result of job losses. Credit unions are doing everything that they can to work with their members. One of the things, I mean, the thing that I hear the most from credit unions is they really wish members, they could get into contact with members to work out a solution. If someone's willing to talk to them, they're more than willing to try to work out a plan. Some of the things that they've already been doing is working on accepting interest-only payments, deferring principal, and rewriting the terms of the loan. We've been doing that well before this Obama plan, and we'll continue to do so and have been doing it before there's been any required mediation. So been proud of the fact, feel that we've been very good at being at the table and being proactive to get our members refinanced out of this. We appreciate the willingness of Senator Scheid to look at some of these issues and work with us. We appreciate her amendment. I think it goes a long ways towards making the process work better. We still do have some concerns in regards to the timeline. I think any time you stretch out the foreclosure process, it makes it much more likely that the home is going to be abandoned. It's going to be decayed, there's less value, and it really hurts everyone from the communities to the lenders to the neighbors. One thing I did want to point out, credit unions, in addition, we hold on to the majority of loans that we offer. So we do everything, the servicing, we hold them in our portfolios for the majority of loans that we offer to members. So that really is a good motivation, and you know, the credit union is going to work with them if they have an issue. One suggestion that we have had in terms of the timeline that's been thrown out to me is if there's a way, I mean, if mediation is unsuccessful, maybe we get rid of the redemption period or shorten it. I think the fact that you can either, if you're exempt through the amendment that Senator Sparks put on, or if you're going through mediation and it doesn't work out, it seems like there is probably a good likelihood that you're not going to be able to get refinanced during the redemption period. So we appreciate Senator Scheid's work on this, and but do have some concerns about the mechanics and the implementation of this legislation. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Humphrey. Mr. Witt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Joe Witt. I'm President and CEO of the Minnesota Bankers Association. We represent 96% of the Minnesota banks. I don't represent any out-of-state banks. I don't represent any out-of-state servicers. I don't represent any out-of-state insurance companies or investment houses that hold mortgages. All of our members are brick and mortar here in Minnesota. We very much support good communication between borrowers and lenders. We also very much want to reduce preventable disclosures. We have had a partnership with the Minnesota Home Ownership Center for the past 5 years, going back to the days when we were working on all the subprime issues, working on all the predatory lending issues, and our lenders have been at the forefront of making sure that we are the responsible lenders. Having said that, we do have some concerns with this bill, and I know it is getting late and it is snowing harder now than when we got here, so I will keep my comments very brief. We have very much appreciated the opportunity to work with the author of this bill, but we do still have some concerns, and we will continue to work with her on those concerns. Our two main areas of concerns are the scope of the bill. A lot of these issues have been touched on already. It seems like it would be an impractical solution to have all the mortgages in Minnesota go through mediation. We do appreciate the amendments that were offered here. But again, if this bill is targeted at those out-of-state lenders and out-of-state servicers that it's so difficult to get a hold of, we would very much support exempting out the Minnesota financial institutions that are doing the right thing. Also, the timing issues is very much a concern for us. If we talked about it being possibly an additional 90 days added on, if there would be an allegation of bad faith and it goes to court, those time periods would be extended even further. So we do see that as a significant concern. One of the other issues that we would note is that in the area of bad faith, the remedies for the creditor and debtor seem to be a little bit one-sided. We would certainly want to work with the author on that as well. We are going to continue to closely monitor this bill. It is something that our members are very concerned about. And again, we look forward to working with the author to make sure that whatever bill comes out of this session is something that will achieve the goals of helping people stay in their homes, which is good for the lenders, it's good for the borrowers, it's good for the community. So we appreciate that opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Witt. Ms. Berger, you're on the list. Would you like to testify, please? Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My name is Christine Berger. I'm with the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And we will confine our comments to Article 1 of the bill. We would really like to thank the author, Senator Scheid, for agreeing to work or talk about making some changes to Article 2. We do have a lot of concerns about increasing recording fees and raising the cost of transactions, especially now when so many people are upside down. Realtors are in the business of helping people buy homes, and so our main concern is credit availability. The Minnesota Association of Realtors believes that the lender mediation bill could have a profound impact on credit availability in Minnesota. The bill is modeled off of the farmer lender mediation, as we've all heard. And that was implemented at a time when lenders followed a different lending model. Now mortgages are bundled and sold to every corner of the world. And so it could make mediation a much more complicated process. Senator Scheid told a very funny story earlier, and in chatting with some of my realtor members from Greater Minnesota who have been in the business for more than 30 years and lived through the farmer lender mediation, they told me that that actually did have a negative impact on credit in the 80s. And what happened was, at the same time that was going on, we also had the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. This is a little history lesson. And because of the U.S. didn't care for this invasion, we entered into a grain trade embargo with Russia. This then forced our local market agricultural market values downward. And so tell me when this starts to sound familiar, Afghanistan problems, falling market values. Because of this instability, lenders tended to not want to get involved into the mediation process and really tightened up their credit. So according to my realtor members who were around at that time, you needed to have exemplary credit. You needed to have no other debt, basically. And farmers carried a lot. They do carry a lot of debt, tractors, livestock, and so forth. And then you had to have 45% to 50% down payment. So that's concerning for realtors. The final concern I'll outline is that we are concerned about the lengthening of the process, and Senator Scheid has said that she is willing to work on that. We're concerned that it could add more properties on the large inventory right now that are for sale, and that could have an impact on people's equity and on local government revenues as well. So thank you very much, and we really know that we have a friend with Senator Scheid, and we appreciate the ability to comment here today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Scheid, that's the end of the list of testifiers.
Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the indulgence of everyone to sit here, all the people who have come to testify, our committee members. You go above and beyond all the time, and it's often on my behalf, and I appreciate it. I would like to move the bill. I think the members want to do something, and I think you know that I will continue to talk to people about technical issues and working out timelines. And I don't know, Mr. Fichte, did you want to say something to Senator Metzen?
No.
I thought I saw him. No.
Okay.
Okay, that's okay. That's okay. He's fine. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd move that Senate File 340, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Judiciary Committee.
On Senator Scheid's motion, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
No. The amendment is adopted. The bill is passed. Thank you, Senator Scheid.
Members, thank you. And you know that Thursday we're not meeting. That's the reward, I guess, for meeting tonight or something. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I told you all that.
The meeting is adjourned.
And she couldn't, though?